Hare Krishna, everyone. We'll try again. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Okay, you're awake. Nice to hear. So first of all, I'd like to seek the blessings of all the devotees, Guru Maharaj, Ananta Prabhu. Again, I'm feeling a lot of pressure today. I was preparing for this class today, and I was so fired up. I was preparing and I was thinking, yeah, I know what I'm going to say, and then last 5 minutes, everything just went. I saw Mahatma Prabhu and I said, Prabhu, I don't know what I'm going to speak. So this is going to be one of those freestyle classes. But actually, no, I had two options here and I wanted to discuss it with devotees of how to do it. Or maybe we can combine it too. So first thing I was thinking is like, we had such a fantastic, ecstatic weekend. Lot of nectar, lot of wisdom, lot of reflection. So I was thinking it would be nice we could summarize all of that. That was one option. So then we actually know exactly what's happening. Or the second option I was thinking was that maybe we could do a short presentation of how to present Krishna consciousness philosophy to a completely new person. Oh, does that sound okay? All right, so we'll do that one then. So shall we try that one out? Like, how do you present Krishna consciousness philosophy to a completely new person? Does that sound appealing? Seems like everyone's quite neutral. Yeah. Yeah, but what does yes mean? Yes. Huh? Yeah. So shall we try that one out? A short presentation of how to present Krishna consciousness philosophy to a completely new person. So we'll do this in a very interactive way, and we've got bored, so we'll try to present it and see if it will make sense. So what we'll do is, I was inspired by this topic because Harinam on Saturday, did everyone enjoy it? It was ecstatic. I find European people are very simple-minded. Like when I, at least the interaction I've had on the streets doing books, I find that they're very simple, and it's, if the Krishna consciousness philosophy is presented to them in a palatable way, then it's something that they can very easily take up to, you know. So I thought maybe we could try this little short presentation of presenting Krishna consciousness to others. But before we do that, I'd like to hear from you. How would you present Krishna consciousness philosophy to someone completely new? Say I'm completely new guy on the street. You approach me. I come to your temple and I'm asking you questions. So what are you guys all about? What would you tell me? The reason why we're doing this is two reasons. First reason is it solidifies our understanding of our own philosophy. This is what was taught to me in my early days in ashram. And second reason is sometimes we may know a philosophy, but how to package it to someone in a completely new, it's a whole new ball game. So these exercises generally is quite useful, and we do this quite a lot. So maybe I thought I could share it with you. Is that okay? So the question is, I come to your temple brand new. I'm a guy from the street, you know, and I'm inquiring about you. What are you guys all about? What would you say? Wow, your philosophy sounds so interesting. I'm ecstatic. Yes. Oh, you guys are old-fashioned. God, does he even exist? I don't believe in God. Did you not go to school? Have you heard of something called Big Bang Theory? Oh, Mr. Darwin. Don't you know Darwin? Darwin, right? Isn't it? We learn it in school. So many people are following us. What's the problem? How would you present Krishna conscious philosophy and introduce Bhagavad Gita? I could wait here all day, no problem. Yes, Prabhu.
You can ask
mate, basically, okay, so you're asking me. So I was just walking down on the street with my family and some crazy guy on his skates comes into my face and presents a book to me. And I wasn't interested, but he was quite pushy. But he was very enthusiastic. He has a great smile. And he invited me to come to your restaurant, which is down here. So that's why I came. What's so good about your philosophy? What's so good about Krishna consciousness? There must be something, right? Like how? Like? How to live. But I know how to live. I'm happy. Good advice. I can go to... I got a coach. I got a counselor. I have friends. Why do I need to come here? Shall we break it down? Okay. Is it okay if I use the board stand up and write? Is that okay? Right? I'm quite loud, so I don't need a mic, right? Is that okay? Okay. Oh, internet. Hey, hello, everyone. Okay, so we'll use a cordless mic, and we'll use this board as well. Is that okay? Can everyone see the board? Yeah? Okay. So, what we'll do is, whenever I meet any new person, whether it's at university, whether it's at college, university, corporate, or people on the streets, or any retreats we do, this is generally what I find very useful. That's a very nice introduction and a hook to get people interested in the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. Okay? So the first thing I ask people is, first question I ask, and it's a very universal question. Every single one of us in this world is looking for one thing. What is that one thing? Good. That's the first step. That's the hook. Everyone's asking. No one wakes up in the morning thinking, I hope today I'm going to be miserable, right? No one does that. So happiness is the hook. Okay? So now the question arises is that what is happiness? Okay? So I'm going to give you guys 2 minutes and I want you to come up with a list of things that gives you or people in general happiness from the ages 0 to 10, from 10 to 20, from 20 to 50, and from 50 to... I'll just say plus. Okay? Just tell me, come up with a list of all the things that gives us happiness from this age range, alright? So maybe what we'll do is we'll split it up and it might make life easy. So half of the Prabhus, maybe you can take 0 to 10. Is that okay? Are we clear? Yeah? The second half, yes, Guranj? Okay, I mean 1. Oh. Oh, as in, it can be list of all the happiness cumulatively. So what do 2, 3, 4, 5 will experience happiness like that? Does that make sense? Okay, yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. Okay, so 0 to 5? Okay. 6 to 10. Okay. Is that okay? Okay, we need 11 to 20. 20 to 50, 50 plus. Is that okay? So actually, everyone can just discuss it. I'll give you 2 minutes, and I just want a list of all the things that gives us happiness. Is that okay? Okay, time starts now. It's a discussion. So discuss. Hare Krishna, everyone. Time's up. I just found out because we've got short time. So let's just list it out. Is that okay? So just shout out all the things that people think that gives them happiness. Happiness changes as we progress in life, right? So what are the things that gives us happiness? Huh? It doesn't matter. Just, so let's start from 0 to 5, then 6 to 10, 11 to 20. Just want to list it down. Food? Okay, good. Good, Raj? Mum? Care? Good.
Attention.
What was that?
Attention.
Right.
Shelter.
Interesting. Shelter.
Play.
What was that?
Playing,
yeah. Absolutely. Let's move on. 6 to 10, 11 to 20. Huh? Oh, gifts. Gifts, yeah? Gifts gives us happiness?
TV.
TV, right. Friendship?
Pets.
We got sports. What else?
Toys.
Friends, yeah, we got friendship. Anything else? You don't have to give devotee answer either. You can be whatever's in general, you know. Let's do 20 to 50. Oh, okay, 11 to 20, sorry.
Pels.
What was that?
Pels.
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 It's like friendship.
Oh, friendship. Oh, pals. Okay, pals. Got it. Pals.
Acceptance.
Wow, yes. Love. Good. Huh?
Freedom.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. I experienced that when I went to university, so it's good. Wait, finally.
Drugs.
Drugs. Now we're talking. Okay, what else? Huh? Wow, at that age? Okay, yeah, I guess. Yeah, yeah. Traveling, music. Johnny, that age, Maharaj, isn't it like not going to school gives happiness? I mean, I was in that category, bunking. Yeah, that's there as well. Okay, let's move on. 20 to 50.
Money.
Success. We got relationship. We'll just do relationship here.
Career.
Kids. Yeah. Money. Yeah, we got money.
House.
Education. Good.
Prestige.
Okay. Anything else? What about 50 plus?
Peace.
Peace. Health. What else?
Weak and
nature. Wait. Weekend in nature. Camping. Okay. Okay. Okay, nature.
Care.
Care, right, good. Good. Anything else?
Soft couch.
Soft heart.
Couch.
Yeah. Soft couch. What's that?
Party.
Oh, party. Well, let's go back. Party. I mean, there is party here as well, right? Yeah, good.
Pension.
Pension, right, pension. Interesting. What else?
Newspaper.
Okay.
Alive family.
Well,
alive family.
No, grandchildren.
Okay, yeah. Okay, good. The list can go on and on. What was that?
Dancing.
Okay. Seems like devotees' inner desires coming out. Desires. All right, good. So we got a list of all these things, wonderful things, right? So the question was, what gives you happiness? And we've listed all these things down. So now the question arises, there are people who will have all of these things, but are they happy? So what's the? So then, do these things bring happiness? Huh? It's temporary, relative. Okay, Maharaj? Uh-huh, which is?
Health.
Okay, good. Okay, health is definitely one thing.
Money, they feel safe.
They feel safe, but there are people who have money, they're not necessarily happy. Right?
I think attachment is important.
Attachment.
Attention.
Attention.
Real friendship.
Peace also.
Real friendship, peace. Security, okay, yeah, that's definitely there. Yeah. Okay, so you do need peace. Okay. You got peace there as well. So I was doing some research, and it's mentioned, very interesting, a modern day society is designed in such a way that they say you need three things to be happy. Three things. If you have these three things, you'll be happy. The first thing is what? No, yeah, health. Health is first thing. Then money or wealth. And the third thing is what? Time. Yeah? You have these three things and you're happy. No, but the interesting thing is, look at this. This is very interesting. This is what modern society tells us. You need these three things and then you'll be happy. But you know the funny thing is? In every aspect of our life, we're always going to be one of these less. We're always going to have two of these, but never three of them altogether. Yeah, as in general, modern day society, emphasis is that if you have these three things, then you can be happy to find other things. But what happens is, if you look at the age group, in life, you're always going to be one short of all three of this. When you're young, what two things do you have? Health and time, but no money. As you grow older, what two things do you have? You have money and you have health. Well, nowadays that's changing, but yeah, in general. And as you grow older, you have time, money, but health you don't have. Right? So even from a modern day context, we're always short of happiness. But this is where our philosophy kicks in. This is where Krishna consciousness kicks in. Krishna conscious philosophy is interesting because how they explain and define happiness is like this. They say happiness is not an external thing. Things is not going to give you happiness. Happiness is an inside job. Okay? So what you experience happiness is based on what level of consciousness you're at. Okay? So if you have lower consciousness, lower things will give you happiness. But as you upgrade your consciousness, you will experience higher realms of happiness. Does that make sense? So this is where Bhagavad Gita explains something called Panchakosha. Everyone know what Panchakosha is? Where in the Gita does Krishna or Prabhupada speaks about Panchakosha? 13th chapter, exactly. So the first kosha that Gita talks about is Anamaya. Okay? Anamaya basically means it's a level of consciousness where your sense of happiness comes from things like food, sleep, just basic things, simple things. Babies, you give them food, are they happy? No. Are they worried about dancing, security, partying? Are babies worried about nature? No, because their level of consciousness is at that. You give them that, they're happy. They advance a little further on. When they grow older, or when humans grow older, the second level of consciousness is? Pranamaya. Pranamaya means what? Other people. Yes, thank you, Maharaj. Other people. Pranamaya basically means relationships, other people, security. You know, so as you grow older, then you start thinking about, okay, not only do I have my personal needs, but there are other people as well. There is me and my connection with those people. I have to take care of people. So security, house, all this stuff comes under the category of pranamaya. So relationships, care, attention, all of that comes under this. When you advance a little further, then you have manamaya. What does that mean? Huh? Yeah, social, political, well-being, or this is more something like on a mental platform. And Maharaj, please correct me if I'm wrong, because there are many different definitions, but the way I've understood is, this is happiness that's experienced on a mental platform. So this is where knowledge kicks in the sense of achievement, right? So for example, when you talk about social and political well-being, solving problems, right? When you go through university and we've got good grades, that comes under manamaya. Like for example, if you did very well in your university, how does that happiness compare to, say, eating your favorite food? Which one's higher? Your achievement. Does that make sense? So that's the level that our consciousness is at. So you'll experience happiness from there, which is higher. Higher than that is what?
Vigyan Maya. What does Vigyan Maya mean? Huh? Yes. So this is where actually spiritual wisdom kicks in. This is where you start questioning that maybe happiness is beyond these three levels of consciousness. Maybe there's something more to life and happiness than what I'm experiencing in these three levels. So this is where your spiritual inquiries begin. This is where you start understanding, oh, maybe I'm not this body. Maybe there's something more to my existence and identity than what I am right now. This is Vijnanamaya. And last but not least is Anandamaya. Now this is the stage where our real need and desire gets fulfilled. So we're looking for happiness. So looking for happiness is not a problem. Looking for pleasure is not a problem. The problem is that we are attracted to low-class pleasure, low-class happiness. Does that make sense? Yeah? So the goal is we're hungry for happiness. And, you know, don't get me wrong, all these levels, you do get happiness. But that happiness is very insignificant compared to what your hunger is. So like, for example, you're starving. And you have a capacity to fulfill your hunger by eating 10 slices of pizzas. Okay? But you only get one bite. How does that make you feel?
Joke.
Right? So that's what it is. Like, one bite is compared to these other levels. But what your real hunger is of happiness can only be satisfied in Anandamaya. Does that make sense? So this is how we can present Krishna consciousness. That we're looking for happiness. This is a science, this is a process in which you can achieve happiness which is based on elevation of consciousness. So now the question arises, how can I elevate my consciousness? Oh, by the way, so our society is dissatisfied. What? Yes, Guru Maharaj. Yes, so I was just going to come to that. When we look at all the things that people think brings them happiness, which categories is it mainly lingering around?
Verse 3.
Right? So you look at it. Food. We can go through it like food. What category does that come under? Yeah, so that's one. Mom, care.
Two.
Attention.
Two.
Shelter. Plane, gifts, TV, friendship, sports, music, traveling, money. It could be a combination, yeah? Success, three, good. Education, three, what's that? I was testing you, well done. And I can spell, it's just a bit awkward. Prestige, what category does it come under?
Three.
All of them. There is no, yeah, so basically as you can see, everything fits around these three things. So therefore, even though people have these things, there's still dissatisfaction. Right? Only when you elevate your consciousness to another realm do you actually access happiness. You remember on Friday, I did that flow chart that Prabhupada heard from Prabhupada in the lecture. Do you remember that flowchart? And we said that there's two levels of consciousness. This is material consciousness, which means that your vision in life is very narrow because you have no idea about spiritual reality where real happiness can be accessible. But spiritual consciousness is a combination of all five. It's not that if you're in spiritual consciousness, you can't derive happiness from food or relationship. But you connect it all together to get to this ultimate stage. Okay? Does that make sense? So now the question is, how do we explain to people how we elevate our consciousness? How do we elevate our consciousness so we can experience that Anandamaya level of happiness? And just to let you know... Sorry? Well... I'm not quite sure how well that will go down. But it's there is definitely an element of truth in that. But the question is, how do we present it others? Yes, Maharaj. getting rid of a stress is that, okay, great, good start. Get rid of your stress, then we can do this. Just want to clarify also, when you're an Anandamayi, it means that you have the ability to function in this world materially, successfully, and spiritually. So it's a great platform to be in because you're so internally satisfied that nothing external affects you. So therefore you can be stress-free, you can be anxiety-free, and still deal with the situation. You're not aloof from it. Is that right, Marsh? Right? So this is where you bring into, if you want to learn how to elevate consciousness, this is why we have a book on elevation of consciousness, which is called? The Bhagavad Gita. Well done, yeah. This is the introduction to Bhagavad Gita. So then this is where we say Bhagavad Gita is a book which is a conversation between two great personalities written or spoken 5,000 years ago, and it talks about ancient science of how to find real happiness by elevation of consciousness. Make sense? Okay, so now the question arises, if you want to teach people Bhagavad Gita, the essence, in short 5-10 minutes, this is the way to do it. So according to Bhagavad Gita, it's explained that you need to understand 5 topics of the Gita to help you understand how to elevate the consciousness. Okay? And then you can play like a little game which I'll play with you. You know what Pictionary is? Pictionary is, I'll draw something and you have to guess what it is. Okay? So the first topic of the Gita. Boom. What's the topic? Oh, I forgot the hand, sorry. Now it might be clearer. What's the first topic that the Gita talks about? Well, you can't say you're not this body. People will get bewildered. Like, what do you mean I'm not this body? Now you're going to present this to a newcomer. So let's focus on the language. What is the first topic Gita talks about?
Who am I?
Good. Who am I? So, yeah, you can say who am I or things that they can relate to. Identity. Yeah? Who am I? Identity. Understanding yourself better. Okay, first topic. Yeah? That's the first thing you have to understand in this journey of how to find happiness. The second topic. What's that? Okay, but again, let's focus on the language. What can you have? You can't say Prakriti, nature. You've got to be a little more specific where they can connect or understand. What was that? Home or the world. Yeah? So Bhagavad Gita is a book which actually teaches us what is our identity. And the great thing about the Gita is that every single one of us have a hidden potential. There is hidden talent that we all have, which we don't have access to, but the Gita can teach you how to access it. Your hidden potential, your hidden talent. The second topic that Gita talks about is that we have a particular identity and we're living in a particular world. So in order for us to survive in this world, this book teaches us the ins and outs of the nature of this world. Is that clear? Right? Second topic. Sure, okay, so I'll repeat. So I was just explaining, the first topic is talking about identity, which talks about our hidden potential, understanding our nature, personality, so then we can interact and function in the world we're living in. This world we're living in, our consciousness is dependent on what we expose ourselves to. So there are certain energies that we expose ourselves to, we can elevate our consciousness, but there are certain energies that we expose ourselves into, which degrades our consciousness. The 3 modes of material nature. So that's what it's talking about, the world or Prakriti. The third topic. What's the third topic?
Interaction.
Okay. More specific?
Activities. So,
activities. What's the word for that?
Karma.
Yeah? So, Krishna, again, in the Gita, the third topic that explains that we are particular individuals, we're living in this world and we're performing activities. And when we perform activities, each activity that we perform has a consequence. When people know that every single of the action is, there is a consequence for it, then people will be more accountable for the action. So this is such a powerful principle, because people can understand, when you see people doing bad things, if they had the understanding of karma and how their activity has a consequence, do you think they'll perform those bad karma if they had the understanding? Probably not. You know? So karma is a very powerful science that Gita presents. And it's very interesting, because it explains in the Gita that once you understand the science of karma, you have the power or the potency to change your destiny. That's how powerful karma is. A lot of times people talk about karma, but it is a very a popular phrase, a cool terminology people use. You know, there have been like there's, I know there is something called Scrubs. I don't know if you guys know Scrubs. No? You guys are too biased. But it's a TV program called Scrubs, which they talk about a lot about karma. There's another program called My Name is Earl. Okay, I don't watch this, I just know about it. So this is an interesting series where this guy has done all these bad things. And for him, he feels bad about it. So he thinks that if I've done all these bad things, I'm going to counteract it to cancel out my karma. Does that make sense? So because of these programs, people have a very screwed up idea of what karma is. But Gita actually clarifies it. Okay, so that's one. And then the next thing. What is that?
Repetition.
Not sure. This is says, yes. This is time, yes. Or kala, time. They say that we have many priceless possessions that we own. But this is actually the most valuable possession that we all possess. Because they say money you can lose, but you can get it back. A moment we can lose, but you cannot get it back. So this is more valuable and rare. So Gita actually is very interesting, because what it does, it teaches you the functionality of time. Now Gita, does it promise you that you can have more time? It doesn't. In fact, Gita explains that you can't get more than 24 hours in a day. But what you can do is you can elevate your consciousness so that you can function in this world in an effective way, so you get your task done quicker. And this is where the modes kick in. When we live in a mode of goodness, everything's very efficient, effective, and you have more time to do other things. So this is how, you know, it talks about the concept of time and how time functions. And last but not least, the other topic. Yeah, so now you can introduce, you can call God, depending on the individual. But you can explain that this is actually our spiritual connection, or the source of where we get everything from. Okay? And we talked about Anandamaya, that is real happiness. So it's actually explained that Anandamaya is a stage where there is exchange of pure love. In essence, that's what we're all looking for, pure love. Sometimes we say happiness is peace, but peace doesn't give us happiness either. Okay, and I'll give you an example. Like a mother, when a mother gives birth to a child, what does the child do? Is the mother peaceful? She's not peaceful, right? So here's the solution. Let's remove the baby out of the picture, take the baby away, and the child doesn't cry anymore. Is the mother peaceful and happy? Is the mother peaceful, first of all? Externally? Externally. Sorry? Yeah, apparently, exactly. So the point is, of course, the mother's not going to be happy because that love was there. Even though there was no peace, love is higher than peace. So that's the reason why Anandamaya is a stage where we are actually having this exchange of pure love. And the way it works is that only when you're connected with the real source, then you can actually achieve or connect to this unconditional love. That's what we're looking for. We're looking for an exchange of unconditional love, which does not exist in this world. The closest unconditional love we find is between who? Mother and a child, right? That's the closest. So that's what we're yearning for. So when we're connected to the source, then because you have access to unconditional love, your need for love is satisfied. And when your need for love is satisfied, you can freely give love and time and attention service to others without expecting anything in return. And this is the power of spiritual love. Does that make sense? And this is where real happiness comes from. So this is a just a small, like, interactive presentation that we can use as one of many other possibilities of presenting to people of how to introduce our philosophy and how to introduce Bhagavad Gita, like that. Because time is short, I could have shown other things, but I think this is enough. But I just want to throw out for questions, comments, and any correction, Maharaj Anantapuru, on... Please. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, okay. So, four of these activity is eternal. It always exists. But one of them is temporary. Which one is temporary? Is identity eternal or temporary? It's eternal. The world... temporary or eternal? But doesn't the world get destroyed? So then is it eternal?
The manifestations are temporary, but the continuation is eternal.
So it is eternal. Good. God, is God eternal or temporary? No, but then didn't an arrow got shot in Krishna's leg and then he left, so... is he eternal? No? Yes? Okay, I was just testing. Good. Eternal. Okay, so you got time and karma. Is time eternal? Time is eternal. Time is always going to be there. So the only thing that's temporary is your karma. Karma is the only thing that's temporary. So this can change. So anyways, next time I can show you another model where Nectar of Devotion explains that doesn't matter how bad our karma may be, we would be getting a lot of severe reaction for our previous karma. But bhakti yoga is so powerful that it can burn away your karma and minimize the suffering. That's the power of bhakti yoga. Like that. Is that right, Marsh? So these four things, and one of them is temporary. Anantapur, would you like to share anything? Oh, no. So, I mean, that depends. Like, for example, on the streets. So, on the streets, when I distribute books or someone new I pick up. See, interaction with people, there is no one set formula that you can just say and people will find very attractive. Krishna consciousness is very personal. So, our interaction with people has to be personal. Right? So, whenever we speak to a newcomer, never have any agenda. Because as soon as you have agenda, people can sense it. We approach people with genuine concern and with a genuine desire to connect with them. Doesn't matter who they are. Right? That people can seep into. Then what you do is in that conversation, I generally use this principle of NIC. Okay? So when I'm interacting with people, I try to find three things about them. So I try to find out what their needs are currently, what are their interests, and what are the concerns? Yeah? So in your interactions, how are you doing? Where are you from? What are you doing? You know, just through a conversation, you can find these three things out. And once you find one of these three things out, find the hook. When you find the hook, then you present the Krishna conscious philosophy. So like, for example, you know, on the streets, like I just have a typical standard line which I use to anyone new that comes. Because in the streets you got short time and therefore you can't give like a 50-minute presentation with your flip chart. So you got to be really quick and quirky. So, you know, I just stop anyone and then I'd ask them the first question. I would ask them, you know, you're a deep thinker. Compliment always works. You're a deep thinker. Can I ask you a deep question before you go? So they're like, oh, okay, well, that's a bit random. It's like kind of unique. You know, so like, yeah, go on then, because they think it's going to be quick. But we all know it's not going to be quick. No idea we're going to spend time with them, but we're also going to empty the pockets as well. Right? So, it's a deep question. What is that deep question? Then you ask them, what would you do if you have 24 hours to live? And then as soon as you ask them that question, they're like taken back. Like it really, because it's like they're in their zone, and the questions like this kind of just kind of takes them out of that. unless they start thinking and asking questions. You know, they start thinking, giving you answers to that question. And so that's a great introduction to Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is a book about a warrior who had everything material in his life, but he potentially had 24 hours to live. Why? Because he's in a battlefield and he could die at any moment. So this is a great conversation that actually asks the most deepest questions in life, and then the answers also given, which can help you to bring about happiness. That's one way. Another way that always works is, do you ever get stressed, or do you ever get depressed, stress, or anxiety? And commonly people will say yes, you know. So then this is another cue that we bring into saying that, oh, this is a great book because it talks about how you can overcome stress by the process of mantra meditation. You know, meditation is a very powerful way. And then you can say so many different things about stress. You know, so then we just say that, oh, we're just monks. We just want to help people in the world. We want to reduce their stress and help them become more happy. And the way we do that is by giving them knowledge like that. So short, snippy answers, and then you can. But when they come into a deep conversation, then you can present the whole thing, basically. So NIC generally works. Does that make sense? Like that. Like, what are they worried about? Like, need could be like, you know, someone on the street, for example, is, you know, like, I need to find something. I need to find a shop. You know, this is just a gross example, person on the street. Concern could be that, what is it that they're worrying about in their life right now? You know, like, I'm worried about, oh, you know what, I've just entered a new university, and, you know, I'm just kind of struggling or trying to connect with people. I'm new to this place, so friendship is something that I need to work on, you know? So then you know straight away that this guy needs attention, friendship. You can be that person, genuinely, like that, Maharaj. So need could be more gross, concerns more subtle. Whereas interest is just something that they like that, in general. Mm. So this is just a short presentation on introduction to Gita. Any... Maharaj, it depends on the individual, really. Because, like, at university, at college students, okay, typically, their needs are what? They need to, you know, they struggle. Needs and concerns that come in pretty much, it can overlap. You know, so their need is they have attention span deficiency, right? They have issues with time management. They have issues with stress. They have issues, or their need is learning personal skills. Relationships are a very big one. Habits is another one. Change of habits. Social, how to make social connection. And the interest, well, I'm sure we all know what an interest of a student is. Oh yeah, time is another one, Marge. Time management, yes. So at university, when we do our presentation, then we choose topics that people can connect with, and then based on that, get a conversation going, and then give a Krishna consciousness perspective to these things, basically. Like that. And then with the interest, like, you know, generally people like to have fun. People like to be with people. People like food. You know? So things that they like, we try to connect. So fun, when we do our events, you try to make it fun. When people come and do retreats, it can be fun. What's that?
People.
Good. Testing you. People. And Sangha, association, is our biggest unique selling product. Genuine association. Oh, and let's not forget the food. Like that. So these are the two key things that generally does the job, in essence. Like that. A few more minutes, questions, comments? Oh, those ones. Right, as in from success stories for...
Some encounter you had using that NIC and how it came out.
Yeah, I can do that, Maharaj. Okay, so recently I was in India, currently. And so one of the skills I'm trying to develop right now is coaching skills. Coaching. Because this is something, it's like, we're devoted because we have access to such wonderful philosophy. When you have to give it to others, it's a whole science. Because, you know, sometimes, like, before I used to think that you have to tell people, this is it, this is the solution. But that generally doesn't work. Because when you give advice to people, they follow it, it doesn't work. Guess who gets the blame? Oh, the mentor or that individual. But coaching is a science where you probe questions to the individual where they themselves find the solution for them. And that's more effective. So recently, so I've learned a few coaching tools and I'm learning the application of it. So recently I was in India and I was in Govardhan Eco Village. I was getting some Ayurvedic treatment and I was doing this yoga teacher's training course. And in that yoga teacher's training course, I came across one individual. And this individual, from the beginning, he's a very cool, trendy guy. But you could also sense that he's not happy. He looks very disturbed. So then, you know, in a casual conversation, we just started talking. And he himself, Maharaj, told me that he's going through depression. You know? So then I thought, okay, wow, this is a bit of an intense situation. So there are certain coaching tools I used in my interaction with him. I asked him simple question that, oh, why are you depressed? And he goes, oh, I was in a relationship and it didn't work out. And that's the reason why I feel very depressed. Low energy, low self-esteem, everything. But this guy is very capable, very intelligent. And I sensed that through my interaction with him. So then I just started probing him questions that his need is self-expression. He likes to express himself. You know, if you give him a stage, you give him a mic, he can express and he's very good at it as well. I also found out his interests are sports. He's a very sociable person, you know. And I found out his concern is he's going through a bad relationship, you know, and he's trying to come out of it. So using these coaching techniques, Maharaj, I asked him a few questions and then he answered it himself and he came to the conclusion of how to overcome his depression, you know. And so at the end of the yoga course, he actually said, I mean, he did it all by himself, but he did mention that, oh, it's thanks to JD that I could actually, you know, come out of it. And but it's actually the yoga course that made him come out of it. That yoga course gave him association, prasadam, wisdom, and physical exercise as well. It's like a whole package, you know. So that at the end, his conclusion was that he wanted to thank the whole yoga course for bringing smile back into his face, like that. And so he's become very favorable. We're in touch. Well, that was just a very recent one. So coaching tools is very, very effective when it comes to dealing with devotees, like that. Yes, so Maharaj, the difference between coaching and mentoring I found out is that mentors, generally, they actually can tell you what to do. But that's because the relationship is there and that trust is there. But coaching is where you're probing, asking relevant questions that makes them think. You know, like for example, one of the coaching tools, Maharaj, I learned very recently is called perceptual positioning. So this is a very powerful tool that you can use to help an individual overcome their issues. So this is just, I'll be 2 minutes, is that okay? Oh no, maybe not. Oh, 8:30. Oh, I didn't. So I'll just share this one tool. And this is very useful, like, because I've seen, like, when it comes to relationship with devotees, this is a very powerful tool. And when Buddha Bhavana Prabhu did very similar yesterday about our chanting, do you remember person A and B? Was that effective?
Yes.
Very useful. So similar principles applied in relationship. If someone has an issue with an individual or a devotee or another person, then this exercise is very, very powerful. And then the way it works is, say for example, I'm a facilitator. Okay? And Ananda Vardhanam Prabhu has an issue with someone. Okay? So I'll get you to stand up here and I'll ask you, okay, Sananda, you don't need to tell me who the person is, but tell me what is your issue. And then he'll tell me all the issue he has with this person. Okay? So then you list it and you understand it. Then I'll get Ananda Varnam Prabhu, to come and stand here. When you stand here, you're in the position of that individual. Okay? And then I ask you, whoever that individual is, so why are you acting like this? So then Ananda, based on his understanding, he will can't try to figure out why is this person acting the way he is to Ananda Vardhanam Prabhu. You know? So this is interesting because this is an exercise of empathy. He puts himself into that person's shoes and tries to figure out why is he acting like this. And then the things that come out is amazing. They get really interesting realization, a whole new perspective of why that individual is acting in that way. It doesn't stop here. Then I get Ananda to come and stand here, and I ask Ananda as a neutral observer what is happening between the two. So he then says, okay, Ananda has big false ego. I'm not saying this to you, but just like, he has big false ego and therefore he has issue with this person, but this person's nice, but it's just not communicated very well. So he himself comes up with that whole solution. And then the last but not final thing is Ananda comes back to his own position. And then Ananda would actually, we'll ask him, so what is the next step for you in this relationship? So not only has he analyzed his whole situation, he's actually understood why the other person's acting that way. He's understood from a neutral observer. And finally now, he's got a step-by-step action point in that relationship. Like that. So these tools is very effective and it really does help. Like that. So that's what coaching tools do. So. Completely, Maharaj. Like, anyways, my services at the manor is dealing with devotees, and Maharaj, I see that miscommunication is like a big thing. And then once you start talking, then everything makes sense. So easy, Maharaj. And especially, Maharaj, with social media. Like, you can send an email to someone with, you know, there's no connotation, but the receiving end may say, oh, why is he being so rude? You know, why did he say like that? But then when you just talk, it's just the way that person is. So a lot of assumptions happens through these media of communications. So these tools really do help, for sure. Like that. I wasn't prepared, Maharaj, but I could share one. This is something that I learned, and this is something that I'm also trying to base it on. So this is a great one. And can we try it out? Would you like to try it out? Yeah? So we can try this one out. So this is a coaching tool which helps you to gain clarity in life and about yourself. Okay? So it says that generally what happens is in life we get confused because we have not established our values in life. Okay? Without establishing values in life, it's difficult to make decisions. And I'll give you an example. Say, for example, someone... Yeah. Sure, Maharaj. So I'll give a very gross, typical example. Could be that, say a person is working very hard in the city or whatever, working hard. So he's earning a lot of wealth. Very rich. But what he really cherishes is relationships, health, you know. These are the two things that he values most. He's unconscious of it. But these are the two things that kind of makes him happy. Okay? So this guy is making a lot of money, thinking that's what real success and happiness it will bring to him. But he's doing that where it's costing his relationship because he's spending so much time at work. So relationship gets hampered. And it's costing his health. Diet is bad, lack of exercise, and so many hours working out there. So what happens is, even though he has wealth, he's not happy. But if he knew his value was relationship and health, he would not compromise on this, but he would compromise wealth because that does not float his boat. Does that make sense? You know, so it's very important to figure out what a value is. And one exercise that we do... Yes, Maharaj? Sure. So the exercise, how do you find out what your value is like this. So the way to find out your value is you think of a time in your life in the past which made you the most happiest. You reflect back. When was the time you were the most happiest? Okay? You try to relive it. And then you try to tell yourself that what is it that you can learn about yourself that made you so happy? Right? What was it about that situation that you felt very happy? Was it the environment? Was it the activity you're doing? Was it the relationship interaction you were having? Through that, you will understand what your values are, basically. And this is how you will understand, okay, these are my values. So then in life, when you come to a crossroad, and you have to make a decision, the decision can be based on what you value the most. Like that. And then this is how you can do it. So the exercise is it's a meditative exercise. You can go back in time and come up with a list of values, and then it can work like that. Please, yes, Marge. Oh, yeah.
This happened to me when I was presenting Satchinanda Maharaj's, the Tree of Life. You were with me. This was in Minnesota when we were there. So this one lady, she was in her 50s, and she has this very strong desire, and also she's very active in helping people get over their problems, whatever it is. She's made her like life other people's problems to try to help. Now, by doing that, her health is going down, and at the same time, she's not happy. She's not happy, her health is going down, and people are telling her that she's got to take some time away from that and take care of her health and then get back to a normal state of mind. She can't do it because she's so attached to helping other people. But so she's stuck in this kind of like, desire, but the desire is actually not good for her, but it looks good because she's helping other people. So she gets her happiness by helping other people, but it's a false sense of happiness because it's just based on her egoistic idea that I'm helping other people. But because it's not really the essence of she's actually not getting the happiness that she's getting from that, but she feels like that she should do this because it makes her feel good on the egoistic level. So in trying to help her, I didn't know what to say. I just said, you got to change. And she realizes it, but she can't do it. So what would you say to a person like that, using your coaching skills?
Actually, Maharaj, you know what the funny thing is? I very vividly remember your interaction with her. And you actually gave her a solution as well. And please correct me if I'm right, but this is what I can recollect. But Maharaj, the reason why I remember this, because whenever I see an interaction you have with people and I see a profound solution you give, I note it down. Or it may be another case scenario. But what you told her, Maharaj, is that if you genuinely want to help somebody, it's a genuine thing, then you have to make sure that you're up to the standard yourself. Otherwise, what help are you giving her? And based on Tree of Life model, because Satchinanda Maharaj also presents this very nicely, he says that sometimes when people neglect their roots or trunk, they try to compensate that neglect by working on the crown. And that's what she was doing. Because she was neglecting other aspects of the tree, to compensate for that, she thought, let me just go out and help others. So then that's my way of compensating it. And that doesn't quite work, because eventually you will break down. Yeah, it looks good externally, Maharaj, but like you said, she wasn't happy from inside. So that desire to help others was just like a tool to kind of hide or cover the other elements.
The symptom of the fact that it wasn't working is their health was deteriorating. Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely, Maharaj.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Guru Maharaj, there's a really good book called Codependent No More, and it talks about exactly this, that people who wear themselves out trying to help other people, the roots go back into their own family of origin issues. Mm. They have had difficult time growing up. Either they have had to become a parentified child, that means they were charged with parental responsibilities even as young children. Sometimes they had to parent their own parent, and say they grow up in that mode, taking care of everyone at great cost to themselves. So as Your Holiness rightly said, how can you take good care of others if you're not taking good care of yourself first? Mm. Because then only you'll be able to sustain it over the long run. So as therapists, the first thing we are taught is self-care. Mm. Unless you're taking good care of yourself, you won't be able to help others, at least on a long-term basis.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And it's interesting because, Maharaj, this is the formula Prabhupada gives us as well, right?
Mm.
Health, sadhana, service, I've had that realization last year, so I can connect with that statement very much. because I think once you come in, you're just so fired up, and you hear these fired up stories from back in the days. It's like, yeah, let's die in the battlefield, you know. But you got to be a bit practical, isn't it? Patience, like that, yeah.
What's that terminology? What is it? The hero concept? The hero concept. That's a big thing in people's ego.
Yeah.
Want to become a hero, yeah, even at any cost.
I may be that, Maharaj. But I realized I'm working on it. Am I going? Okay. Can I show you one more model?
Yeah.
Is that okay? I'll show you one more model. This is great, Maharaj. Thank you, because now at least these models that I'm making, at least I can get it corrected now. So this is good. This is like the review of those models. So this model, I actually learned it from Nityananda Pran Prabhu from Chicago. And then I added a few bits and bobs. So this is a very interesting model. This model that I'll present now, which I learned from him, it's a model that summarizes our whole kind of philosophy in a gist. Okay? So this is how he explains. So he said that we come from the spiritual world, correct? We're in the spiritual world. In the spiritual world, we are... what's our nature in the spiritual world? Great. So we are Sat, Chit, and Ananda. Correct? And now, when we had the desire to come to the material world, out of these three things, what's the first thing that gets covered? Or even the first thing, huh? Chit, the knowledge, avidya kicks in. Because what happens is when the soul enters the material world, it actually gets bombarded into an energy called PIG. What does that mean? Three modes of material nature, right? So as soon as you get exposed to the material energy, the chit potency gets covered, we get influenced by avidya, and our pure consciousness becomes contaminated, and based on, so our consciousness now is contaminated. Now it's mentioned that the types of body we get is based on the consciousness that we have. Okay? So what happens is from here, there's two paths we take. Either we take a path of lower species of life, because our consciousness is at that level, and we actually go through this cycle how many times? How many times? Lower species? 8 million. Yeah? 8 million times. You go through this cycle. So say you take a form of a plant, you know, you die, you go into that consciousness. Because it's a gradual evolution of consciousness for lower species, they go through it all 8 million times. However, if the consciousness is slightly elevated, they take a birth as a human form. So this is the human form that they take birth as. Now in human form, they have choice of how many? How many choices do they have of human form? 400,000. What does that mean? Does that mean you get 400 different types of bodies? It's level of consciousness, right? So this could be demigod, this could be caveman, or what are the different variations there is. As soon as you get human... So question arises here now. Do animals get karma? Animals don't get karma. So why is it that cows at Bhaktivedanta Manor are looked after so nicely, but the cows down the road are sent to slaughterhouses? Good. Animals don't get karma, but they burn off their karma. That's the difference. So that's the reason why animals, whatever action they perform, they're not kind of accountable for it. They don't get consequence for their action because they're functioning on instinct. Whereas when it comes to human being, now you have higher intelligence, so you actually are accountable for your action. So with human beings, you have subtle desires. You desire. Once you desire, what's the next course of action? Desire leads to action. Okay? And once you have an action, what happens? You get karma. You're building up karma now. This is where your karma bank balance is building up. And once you build up your karmic bank balance, what happens? Is you die. Way glorious. But now, the question is, what determines what happens next? Do you get lower species of life, human form of life? What determines it? Three things. There's three things that determine what consciousness you'll be at. Yeah, so karma is one thing. What's the other thing? Good. Desire. And what's the last thing? No, we've got that. Karma, desire. What's the last thing? Bhagavad Gita, 8.5. At? Time of death, right? Your thought at death. So these three combines to determine your next consciousness. And you actually just go through this cycle again and again and go through this. And we're stuck in this cycle, basically, looking for happiness. So the goal is to get back, basically. That's the idea. So, you want to see another model? Last one. This is, yeah, good. So that was the next model. Okay, so next model. This is why Nectar of Devotion is a powerful book. It explains it very nicely. So Nectar of Devotion explains that what is the root cause of our suffering? Avidya, okay? That's the biggest problem, avidya. Ignorance is what causing all this problem. We think we're this particular body, so we think, let's just hang around here until we find happiness. But we don't realize that the body or these forms we get is temporary and is going to die, but your desire is going to be eternal because that's your nature. So what are you ignorant of? Your identity. Okay? So because you are ignorant of your identity, you think you're this material body, so you start having desire. But this desire is sinful. So let's define what sinful desire actually means. Sinful desire basically means material desire. Okay? That's what it means. Okay? So then you start having, you have material desires. Material desires turns into material action. Yeah? So this is called something, and that's called action. I'm just trying to remember the Sanskrit. And when you have action, what happens? You got two types of reaction. What are the two types of reaction?
Positive and
there are two types of karmas you get. Pious and impious, but they also get broken down into two. They're called instant or delayed. Right, Maharaj? Yes. This is called aparabdha karma, and this is called prarabdha karma. So unmanifested and manifested. So we'll call this unmanifested, this is manifested. Right? So when you get manifested karma, you get reaction straight away and you'll suffer. So that's fine. When you suffer, at least you burnt it off. But or enjoy, yes, exactly. This is good because at least you burnt it off. But the problem is actually this one. Unmanifested. Why? Because unmanifested means that there are reaction we need to get, but it hasn't come. But because of it still being there, it gives rise to something called proclivity. Or proclivity is called kutam. Is that right, Maharaj? Kutam. So this means tendency. Okay? So the tendency is like, you know, tendency is just your, that desire intensifies. Okay? So when that proclivity increases, your material desire increase, your action increase, this increases, then your manifest action increase, and your suffering, enjoying also increases. So this is why we're still stuck here. Either enjoying or suffering. But bhakti yoga or devotional service is so powerful that the first thing that happens is what? When we engage in devotional service, your unmanifested karma reduces. You're burning it off. Right? So when unmanifested karma reduces, your proclivity also reduces. Your tendency, your material tendency also reduces. When that reduces, what happens? Your material desire reduces and your material action reduces, and all this reduces and your suffering enjoyment reduces because you are now accumulating a karma. And when you accumulate sufficient a karma, you will think of Krishna at the time of death, and that's how you go back to God, according to Nectar of Devotion. Does that make sense, Maharaj? This is Nectar of Devotion, I believe. Yeah, and this is how you can get out of this cycle. Yes, Maharaj. There are six symptoms. One of them is reducing your karma. Okay, so can I ask you a question now? So the question is, why is it that it seemingly seems that devotees suffer more than people who don't engage in devotional service? This one? Yeah, but sometimes like it seems like devotees suffer more than people in general. Sorry?
They don't have delayed karma.
Okay, so you're saying they just burn off their manifested karma. Okay. Yes.
I'm going to guess. They haven't been able to taste the happiness of Krishna consciousness at the same time they have stopped their material activities. So they're not getting anything from their material activities, but still they haven't really accessed the happiness that is there, and so they still have the material desires. They can't act on it, but at the same, because they are in knowledge that these things don't give them any pleasure, but still they haven't been able to enter into the realm of bhakti yet.
So, Maharaj, does that mean that individual should engage in material activity until he gets the taste?
No,
because you're in no man's land, right?
You have to have faith in the process and continue by the association of devotees can you sustain yourself through those periods. Mm. Otherwise you're lost, because then you're subject to your mind, which tells you you're not happy. Because the mind wants to act in immediately. It wants instant something. The mind can't really, unless you're fixed in the philosophy, although you're not tasting it, you can't develop that patience and determination that's needed.
Like you mentioned this morning, right, Marge?
Patience,
determination, enthusiasm.
Yeah, association of devotees will keep you. Association of devotees means associating with the process at the same time. So you just have to realize that you're just going through a transition period. But that happiness is down the road. It's there. But Krishna's doing one thing. He's stopping your material suffering. Even though you're not tasting the happiness, you're not getting the suffering that you would be normally getting if you were still acting in the material way. But we don't see that because we're only looking for the happiness. Someone out, there was a couple hands over here.
Yes, Paramakaruna Nitai. Did I get right?
Yeah. Sometimes devotee commits higher offenses to the devotees, other devotees, or to the deities.
Okay. So someone who has good material karma, but he knows that I need to get out of here, and I'll engage in devotional service, but because he's caused offense, he's suffering more.
This offense is like, or maybe
right.
Sarabdha karma would be higher in that case.
So then, if you got good material karma, then don't come to devotional service. It's risky. Because you were enjoying before anyways, right?
But you will enjoy, but that's not the way to go back to the spiritual world. So you have to accept this process and carefully, act so that you get out of that cycle.
Yeah, because they say spiritual life is like razor's edge, right? Slight inattention and then it's finito. Right, I guess. Right, Maharaj? Yes, Anandavardhana.
When you begin devotional service, Krishna interrupts with your karma. And in the first sight, it looks like that he's pushing you more, but he's helping you, but we don't see that he's helping us, because he's not like demigods that just fulfill our desires. He's leading us to the right goal, but we cannot see this. And then,
that's also another reason. Yes, Prabhuji. Thank you.
To me, the key to the answer is why does it look like that? It looks like that. That's exactly what it is. Because when you're deep in ignorance, you don't realize you're suffering. I compare that to a being living in a mud hole, up over the head. Mm. What does this being think of himself? Mm. What does this being know of himself? It only has its own imagination about himself, no truth. And as usually, we tend to think of ourselves quite nicely. So that picture that this being has of himself, it's quite nice. And so he can go out and show good facade, and everything seems nice. When now this being climbs out of the mud hole and stands in the sun the first time and looks down at himself, he sees himself dripping of mud. So his picture of himself will change to worse. That's kind of another speculation that I thought about this.
The mud man. Nice.
Yeah, that's true. It says that there's two kinds of people that are actually really
happy. Yes, they do, Marge.
Yeah, the Bhagavatam mentions there's two types of people that are actually happy. One who is on the transcendental platform and the gross fool. The gross fool is happy because he thinks he's happy. And he doesn't really know he's suffering. And the transcendentalist is actually happy. So it gives that comparison between the two. Not comparison, I'm saying that they're Both of these people in the middle are not happy. It's only these two.
So pick your side. You want to go up or down? Right, Maharaj? Right. Yes, Farooji at the back.
Vishwana Chakravarti Thakur gives three reasons in his commentary in Srimad Bhagavatam, and I can remember only two, I'm sorry. One is to give reasons to the atheists to continue following their beliefs, because they're also his children and he's protecting their beliefs as Paramatma in the heart. And another one is to protect the confidentiality of devotional service. Because people then, what's that devotional service? You suffer just like I suffer, you know. This devotee died of cancer, so how is Krishna protecting you? And in that way, the secret of devotional service is protected by the from the superficial people.
And to protect the non-devotional philosophies, I think that's so. Because if everybody would be happy, then all the options of other philosophies would be gone. So that's Adi Purusha told me that. To protect non-devotional philosophies, I mean, because they are aligned with our desire to abide to non-devotional ways of living, so to give us option in that sense.
Well, there's two answers, Maharaj. Maybe you could correct me. Two, three reasons of why devotees apparently suffer. First reason is that devotee, Krishna wants him to go back very, very quickly back to Godhead. So if that devotee is living this life, he could either live full life in this world and burn off his karma in a steady pace, or he intensifies it all in one life and takes him back. That's one reason I heard. Second reason why a devotee goes through suffering is apparent suffering. But like we hear from the Pandavas, that they apparently suffered, but that was to teach others the lesson of how a devotee goes through suffering condition and still think of Krishna at the time of death. Or think of Krishna during the tribulation, I guess. That Bhagavatam verse, Maharaj. Tatte nu kampanu shimikshamano. Yeah, these are the two reasons, I thought.
That particular verse simply relates to those who accept the hardships and difficulties that Krishna puts them in as opportunities for purification of the heart, and sees it like that. And then they thank Krishna within their heart, and by not because they're put in there, but because they accept it. The acceptance is actually what is purifying them, because they can see it as actually the hand of the Lord for their own elevation. And therefore, Bhukti Padesha Dayabak, the kingdom of God is open. So that, yeah, but that's different from material suffering. That's given directly by Krishna. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Krishna does that for those who are sincere. If you're not sincere, you won't get any suffering.
So we shouldn't be sincere. No, I'm joking.
But the thing is, devotees don't suffer. The word suffering applies to the material, the material world. It is difficulties that come in relationship to our purification. That's all. Devotees don't suffer like the non-devotees. Why? Because we don't live for the things that we suffer for. We live for Krishna. Therefore, we're just tolerating the difficulties because we have a higher goal, a higher principle. Where the sufferings that come by way of the material energy on a materialist simply destroys their whole concept of happiness, because they need these things. We don't need them. Even health we don't need. You know, if Krishna takes our health away, still we can chant Hare Krishna and go back home, back to Godhead. So, you know, for devotees, there's never any loss. But a non-devote can't see that. And that's what Prabhu was saying, was Radha Govinda was saying. You know, Krishna protects, covers the non-devotees. They can't see the same thing or experience what the devotees are going. It looks the same, but it's not. It's completely different. Does that make sense?
Also, Krishna wants to glorify his devotees and show by their example how we should react if we have knowledge or realized knowledge that we understand what this karma is, what we are suffering. Not that we claim Krishna is good, not good for us, why I'm suffering.
We can open another chapter, then we go on. Yes.
No.
Look what Prabhupada went through. I mean, we wouldn't be able to do that. And it looks like really, I mean, he had two heart attacks on the boat, no money, no place to live, foreign country, ill health. But you know, it wasn't suffering for Prabhupada, it's just something he had to endure in order to, he kept his mission going. I mean, any 999 people out of 1,000 would have turned around if they had those same challenges that Prabhupada had. But he wasn't phased, it didn't phase his mission at all. So for Prabhupada, that was a way of glorifying him. But, I mean, if that was done to maybe some of us, we wouldn't have been able to continue. So Krishna won't do that to everybody. He'll only do it to those that he knows has the capacity to continue. Because Krishna will not destroy your devotional service. But he will put you in situations that apparently is difficult, only so you can go deeper in your own relationship with him. He does that a lot. So that's why a non-devotee cannot see that. They can't see that. But therefore, the devotee is actually experiencing love, more love when Krishna puts them in that different situation. Because they get closer to Krishna in those situations. Yeah. We know the story of Bhakti Tirtha Swami. When he was, excruciating pain. And his body was racked. Radhanath Swami was reading Chaitanya Charitamrita. And he was in tremendous pain, but he was absorbed in listening. And at one point he says, it doesn't get any better than this. It doesn't get any better than this. And he said, we're there, we're there. And Radhanath Swami said, where are we? He was tasting the spiritual world. Because he was absorbed in Chaitanya Charitamrita and he was no longer inside of his body. He was outside of his body. So, you know. But that doesn't come to everybody. That's special. What does Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati say? He says, what did he say? I forgot what the words he uses. Suffering only comes to the chosen few. Something like that. I mean, we might have some material suffering that's simply due to residues of our karma, but that's not what that verse is talking about. That's talking about when Krishna gives apparently some suffering. It brings the devotee to a higher state of consciousness. and glorifies that devotee in the eyes of others. But he won't do that to someone who he knows will not be able to take it. He won't. Krishna will not break anybody's spiritual life by giving him too much. He gives you more than you think you can handle, and you may also feel like that. That's because you haven't looked deeper into your own self and see that actually you have the capacity to, you know, move forward and do to the situation. So he does that. He wants to bring you full, and you mentioned that sometimes he puts a lot of pressure to move you faster back to Godhead, yeah. But we've always heard from Prabhupada said he will not give you more than you can handle. But you may feel like that. You may feel like that. So when you get that, you should realize it's I can handle it. But now I have to access more of Krishna's mercy in order to get through this. Does that make sense? Ananta? No comment? Ananta can talk from realization. Okay. So if you want to wrap it up.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I just thought, I mean, I had something else to present, but this came up, so. Okay, thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki.